NATO countries have started delivering weapons to the Ukrainian military. What can you say about this on the background of a very fragile ceasefire that is holding for now? How could that possibly change this ceasefire? And why now, after the ceasefire was enacted, is NATO taking steps to deliver weapons?
These are two vital questions. In fact, I have reread the NATO-Russia Act right before this interview, and I see very clearly there is no thorough discussion necessary that the paper, in fact, is dead. It is dead by killing, by murder, in fact, through NATO. NATO has violated nearly each and every paragraph of this important paper, which has stabilized Europe for a certain time and is doing so since at least 2003, when, in fact, Iraq was infected by an unauthorized invasion. And now we come back to Ukraine. If NATO is now delivering weapons to Ukraine, this is the final step to any NATO-Russia cooperation, of course. Because that will, in fact, lead to a collapse of the fragile ceasefire very soon. We know on the map it's very clear that by seven big positions around the eastern free republics, the self-declared republics, People's Republics of Lugansk and Donetsk, it is very clear that there's an offensive in the preparation right now. The NATO weapons will seal the potential of this offensive on a high level, very bad for the people living there.
What can you say about, also, we have the elections coming up in Ukraine, and what effect will the elections likely have on the ceasefire, if at all?
I do have the feeling that looking at the last presidential elections, which were, to say the least, very doubtful, and I call them, in fact, a fake. We have to make sure that we do understand that the upcoming parliamentary elections, nothing but a kind of thin legal surface on the fact that this is not a democratic election. First of all, you have a war in your own country, then you have oppressed at least two important political parties. That is the leftist party, the communist party, and the party of the regent and other parties. Some are even excluded from the campaign. So what, in fact, do we have here? We have a one-sided fake election coming up. And to my best understanding as analyst, that result of that fake election will be used against the people who are trying to withstand some kind of Nazi siege in eastern Ukraine.
Let's talk about the weapons, going back to the weapons once again. Will those weapons be instrumental in boosting Ukraine's defense potential? And how could they change the balance that's holding in the country right now, if you can call it such?
I do have the feeling it is not Ukraine's defense potential which is being strengthened here, but the aggressive potential against its own people. This government, this is not a civil war. This is a military war fought by the Kiev regime, which is an unlegitimized regime. It's the result of a coup d'etat instigated by the U.S., by the CIA, by the U.S. embassy in Kiev, which has on a daily basis led this coup d'etat and is leading politics in Ukraine. And whenever you have any Ukraine offensive, any decision to strike against their own people in the eastern and southern republics, it is coming directly after a high-level visit from the U.S. We have three, four very outstanding examples in the last month. So what is happening here? The weapons will come, and they will be used to kill their own people. And, of course, any kind of balance by nightly telephone calls established between the two presidents, Poroshenko and Putin, will be very fragile after that.
What, in fact, can we expect? What kind of impact will these weapons have on the relations between Russia and Ukraine? Will Ukraine continue to talk to Russia when it has been fortified by NATO weapons?
You see, these NATO weapons may re-encourage the Ukrainian regime to take a tougher stance against Russia. But in fact, it will weaken the Ukrainian regime when it tries to take a tougher stance in the battlefield against their own people and brothers, sisters, relatives, and so on, increasing the shelling of civilian areas, killing thousands of civilians so far, being criticized by OSCE, which was in fact to be reinforced by the NATO-Russia Act, and now is powerless. How often has OSCE and UN already criticized shelling of civilian areas without any result? So this is going to happen much more than in the past. And in fact, NATO delivering weapons to a regime that is killing its own people is a huge crime. That is no question.
I want to talk about the sanctions also that were imposed after the ceasefire, not just by the United States, but also by the European Union. How can you comment on that? Why were those sanctions imposed when there is, in fact, this fragile ceasefire that is holding for so far?
You see, the craziest part about these sanctions, which I call criminal, crazy, psychopathic, completely wrong, unfounded, the most, for me, the craziest point is that after, of course, there was a withdrawal from certain positions around the city of Mariupol, for example, in southern Ukraine, you had these sanctions coming. Russia had stepped back from any kind of tough stance against NATO, and still these sanctions keep coming. Russia has made sure and made possible that there are successful negotiations going on between the southern and eastern republics and the Kiev regime, in spite of all the mistakes and terrible killings this regime has carried out in these eastern and southern republics. And still the sanctions are coming. So in fact, I feel the policy of sanctions is now completely void of any real connection to the Ukrainian issue, where Russia is in a very good position and NATO has put its out of any law against the UN Charter, against any kind of international treaty they have signed. So what we have here is that the sanctions come to Russia because Russia is to be subdued, pushed into obedience by NATO. That is the plan behind that.
I spoke with an expert last week or just recently about the sanctions and about the fact they had been imposed after. Now, he seemed to feel that the sanctions were also imposed with absolutely, it wasn't because of the ceasefire, because of lack of a ceasefire. The sanctions were imposed for a reason that you've outlined yourself. But if we talk about what Russia can do about this, now that expert seemed to suggest that if Russia were to offer sanctions or counter those sanctions, this latest round of sanctions, with sanctions which would effectively cease the delivery of gas to the EU, that might actually be a game changer in this whole situation. Would you agree with that?
Of course, seizing any gas export to the EU is a complete game changer. That's no question. Russia has done a very good, measured, wise, and prudent policy so far by always doing a bit less in counter-sanctions and any countering of NATO's aggression than they could have done. So if they continue this wise policy, they will continue to find a lot of followers in the Western and NATO countries. This is my assessment of it. There are a lot of people already, this poll which was done in German TV, NTV, where 90% of the people expressed understanding for President Putin's policies, which was a shock, I think, to Western governments. And they tried, in fact, with some kind of fake polls to counter the effect of this interesting poll. So what we have here is a decision by Moscow to prudently counter all future sanctions, and trying to preserve as much of the good and swift business being done. Just remember that Great Britain has increased gas imports from Russia by 40%. They could have also bought Norwegian gas, but they didn't. They took Moscow as a partner. And the reason is very simply, Moscow is a very good partner, very rarely letting politics interfere into business. So that was a good choice, I think, by the UK, because they are now very safe on their gas deliveries. But of course, if they really want to smash relations, they may succeed one day. That's clear.
Do you think that if Russia were to cut off gas supplies to the EU, that would cease the sanction war? I mean, would the EU have to come to terms with choosing between the US and the EU as a partner?
It's a very good question. I tell you something very serious. I know the times are serious and this is a serious crisis. What we have here is the declared will of Washington to disturb the peace in Europe. They have no interest whatsoever in any person living in Europe or in Russia. They have no interest whatsoever in the well-being of the countries and the peoples living here. They have definitely power-related and power-greedy-related interest in disturbing the relationship in order to push Russia into obedience or start a conflict. And that could very well be an armed conflict. We have an open, declared insistence of the analysts and the planning think tanks in the U.S. that they want to disturb the delivery of raw materials for energy production from Russia into EU. They want to stop it. They want to disturb it. If they can stop it, they stop it. If they have to make do with just disturbances, they at least try to reach these disturbances. That is an aggressive policy that is already being conducted against Russia. And the U.S. right now, as the predominant power in the world, would be very happy, in fact, if they could achieve this kind of stopping any gas oil delivery from Russia into EU.
What would result from that, though? What kind of result would we have if, let's imagine that Russia stopped gas deliveries? What would happen with the EU and with Russia and with their further relations? Would they actually understand that they need each other more than they need the U.S., or would there be...
The relationship, if I may say that, is already under a big strain. Any stopping of these deliveries, if you in fact let some kind of steel wall growing between the two sides, between the EU on one side and related countries like maybe Ukraine and Russia, that would deteriorate relations further to a situation where we can very swiftly cross from a renewed Cold War into a hot war. And the preliminary stages are already being shown in Ukraine. We have a certain number of Russian freelancers fighting on the side of the self-proclaimed People's Republics. And we have all kinds of secret armies from NATO provenience being through academy or other mercenary companies in Ukraine. We have this direct involvement of the CIA and the American embassy in the fighting in Ukraine. Very quickly, after all these stages already being passed, we can come into further conflict, including now NATO weaponry.
Christoph, what can be done by the EU, by Russia, by the parties involved, really, to sort of bring an end to the conflict and continue with normal relations, or have we gone too far already?
No, it's never too far to work for peace. Even if, there were hot shots fired between NATO countries and Russia, it's not too late to talk about peace. I have been working in the last 5 years very strongly with my Russian friends to, in fact, convince them, push them, make them curious about this. They let their people, the Russian people, contact Western people directly. It's called, as a professional term, people-to-people relations. What President Putin has said in a last big interview a few months ago with a German journalist, that Western countries pay as foreign agents after the new Russian law 650 NGOs in Russia to convince the Russian people that Putin is a bad president. In fact, we have two organizations of Russia in Western countries, one in Paris and one in the U.S. So this is what we have. That's zero. So unless Russia is now stepping up very strongly these kind of organizational backgrounds to let people-to-people talks blossom, we will not be able to regain peaceful ground. And for the European governments, I can only give them the advice, open your minds, your hearts, your policies to this effort from the Russian side to let people talk to people. If the governments do not understand each other very well right now, it should be possible that the people talk to each other. It's very interesting to see that one of the first sanctions against Russia was the stopping of the visa talks, to stop any kind of visa necessary between Russia and the Schengen area. And that unfortunately was stopped, and it was coming already 2 years ago. For the Germans, our Chancellor Merkel had made this chief issue, as we call it. And I made a joke at that time and said, Merkel takes this as a chief issue, doesn't mean she will solve it positively. And that unfortunately is exactly what happened. It was not solved, it was hardened.